You seek the key, but first you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and A-Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, their ZDX is the most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today. Hello and welcome to the Two Robbies podcast, your destination for in-depth discussion and analysis of the Premier League. I'm Robbie Musto, he's Robbie Earle, and we're joined by a very special guest, Gary Lineker. So with that, here are today's topics. Kai Havertz haunts his former club by scoring a brace in Arsenal's 5-0 thrashing of Chelsea to keep the pressure at a high in the title race. Liverpool's title hopes are dealt a brutal blow in a 2-0 Merseyside derby defeat to bitter rivals Everton, and Manchester City showcase their finest form in a 4-0 win at Brighton that keeps the fate of the title race in their own hands. And that's what we have coming up in today's episode.
Well, before we get to the games, mate, we have got a special guest, and just a little rundown. His career: born in Leicester, scored over 300 goals for club and country, played for Leicester, Everton, Barcelona, Tottenham, won the Copa del Rey in 1988, won the FA Cup with Spurs in 1991, played in two World Cups for England and won the 1986 World Cup Golden Boot with 6 goals. And I think we all know him as the host of Match of the Day. Gary, thanks so much for coming in and speaking to us. Just talk to us a little bit about the title race and how people have seen it in the UK.
Firstly, hi both, and thanks for having me on. I think it's been a really fascinating season, and I think for the first time in a long while we've kind of got a three-prong title race, or that might have changed a little bit over the last few days. Everyone's been really excited about it because, you know, Manchester City have kind of run away with things a couple of seasons now. We're all hoping it goes to the last day of the season, because it's been a while since that happened. Certainly happened with three clubs. With Liverpool's slight dip in form, that might not be the case going into the last day of the season, but there could yet be some twists and turns. Mm-hmm. But it's been thoroughly entertaining.
Yeah, I think what we'll do now, Gary, we'll just go over this midweek round of fixtures where there has been a real twist and a turn, I think. But the three main teams, Rob, were playing different days. Let's go through in chronological order. Starting with Tuesday in Arsenal, beating Chelsea 5-0. A couple of goals for Kai Havertz. Ben White got a couple of goals as well, and Leandro Trossard scored the first goal after 4 minutes. We did see Kai Havertz revert to that
false nine.
Nine and a half or whatever he gets called in that position there. Thomas Partey was the other addition, Rob, coming in as the holding player, which allows Declan Rice to do that kind of box-to-box stuff that he's so good at. This and to Gary's point about the excitement building in, certainly building here, Gary, there's so many Arsenal fans in the US, and rightfully so, mate. They're really excited right now, Rob.
Yeah, and in some respects, I was talking about Arsenal to Bex the other day and saying, like, they're probably the most balanced team in terms of defensive structure and shape, and then attacking threats at the top end of the pitch. I'm really interested, Gary, and I'd love to get your take on Kai Havertz in the false nine role. You were a full nine in some respects, a centre forward who played down the middle, who played high. Talk to us a little bit about a false nine in his role and maybe changing the way that the team play.
Yeah, it's become sort of a bit of a fashion or a fad, playing what we call the false nine. It's kind of somewhere between a nine and a ten, not quite a box player, but I think he plays it really well. And obviously in the last few weeks, he's really chipped in with a lot of goals, because he's not just a nine that just kind of drops deep and just wants to be involved in the play, even though he does do that. But he's also pretty good at getting behind defenders. Yeah. And that's really important, I think, for Arsenal because of the way they play. It stops teams playing really high, so they have to drop off because of the fact that he will threaten them behind. Yeah. So they have a little bit of concern by that. So I think it pushes the defenders deeper. Then you get a little bit more space in midfield. But I think he plays it as, you know, as well as anyone has played it this season, certainly in the Premier League, particularly in the last few months. Took him a little bit of time, didn't it, to adapt to life at Arsenal. But I like him a lot. He's a, he's a good finisher. He's calm. He's got a lovely touch. And as I said, he can come short or he can go long.
He's one of my favourites. Mr Musto to my left is not so sure.
I wasn't sure at the start, Gary, with the signing, the big amount of money. And we did speak to Mikel Arteta that really did see him when he sold him as that replacement for Granit Xhaka on the left-hand side of midfield. And he had plenty of reps there. Maybe, well, we always knew that he could play as a false nine. That seems to be his best position. Just on other things with Arsenal, Gary, just interested in, of course, we all know what happened to Arsenal last year. What are you, when you see them this season, what does it look like to you that they've got better, they've learned, or they've grown? Obviously, the signings will have, Declan Rice and Kai Havertz, but is there anything that you see in them differently that gives them a stronger chance of winning the title?
I think they've matured a little bit more. You know, it was their first real run at it, wasn't it, last season? And they were they came up a little bit short at the end, but I think they really missed Saliba in the last few weeks. He got injured, if you recall. That's not happened this season, and that partnership he has with Gabriel at the back is really strong. I mean, their defensive record is exceptional this season. Not only are they good defensively, but they, you know, the reason they don't concede that many goals, they have the ball a lot as well. So they're very much a possession-based team. I think they've got a bit more about them. They've added to the squad, as you said, that we talked about Kai Havertz, but Declan Rice has been an absolutely terrific signing. He's played holding role for, well, most of the season. Then the last couple of months, he's been playing a kind of more advanced midfield role. And he's very, very good at kind of breaking the lines with the ball at his feet. He can run past players, and he looks really strong in that position. He's chipped in with more goals because of that. And I think both those additions and the fact that, I think with Havertz when he came, no one really knew what his position was, and there's a lot of debates. What is he? What is he? But he's, as we talked previously, he's occupied that number nine as a kind of false nine. But Rice's all-round game and his consistency, and he's pretty much been an ever-present this season. I think he's given them that extra little bit that perhaps they didn't have last season. Whether it's enough to actually win the title, I don't know, because, you know, City are the sort of team that could just win every game now, in which case they'll win the title.
Can I just follow up on that, Gary? So you just went there, you know, with the big if. My question is, like, if they don't do it at Arsenal this season, what do you think could be the reason why? Where might they just come up short?
I would say because Manchester City are so good. Because I think if they do get beaten, it'll probably be City now after Liverpool's slip-ups. I don't think it will be down. Last season, you could argue, you know, they fell off at the end. And I mentioned the reasons why I thought that happened. I think they've matured, they're getting better. And even if they don't quite pull it off this season, it'll be really most likely down to City's brilliance, and we know how good they are. They're probably the best team in the world. I know they got knocked out of the Champions League last week, but, you know, let's be honest, they were much the better side, particularly in the second leg, and things didn't go for them and lost on penalties. But, no, I think they continue to make progress, Arsenal. They're getting closer and closer. If it doesn't happen this year, then they'll be very, very competitive next year and look a solid bet to be consistently challenging for titles in the forthcoming years.
Just before we move on, Gary, you've touched a point there. I just wanted to get your thoughts on Mikel Arteta, because sort of last season he was a bit of, you know, people poking at him in the over-celebrations and all that stuff. It looks to me like he's matured as much as his team. I know you've had him a couple of times on Match of the Day doing a two-way with him. It feels to me like he's more comfortable in himself with his team.
Well, he's probably matured along with the team as well. You know, he's still relatively young to management. I don't mind the celebrations on the touchline. I don't mind that at all. You know, enjoy it. I don't like people that complain about that, the old celebration police, as we tend to call them. I like his enthusiasm. I know he irritates fans, but I don't think he irritates his own fans, and that's the only thing that really matters to him. I think tactically he's clearly very, very good. He gets it. He's obviously very cerebral. He's learned a lot, as you would, alongside Pep Guardiola when he was there at Manchester City with him. He just looks like he's going to be an elite manager if he's not already.
Yeah.
Gary, just a quick line before we move on to another game on Chelsea. Wow, difficult job for Pochettino, given the recruitment that's been at the football club. How do you see the situation now at Chelsea, Gary, with it being more the recruitment as a problem, or is Pochettino not the right guy now? Where do you think the main kind of problems lie for their struggles so far this season?
Well, I don't think it's a managerial issue. I think Pochettino's a really top quality coach, and I think he knows what he's doing, but he's been dealt a difficult hand. They have, they've spent enormous amounts of money, but you wouldn't say particularly wisely. They've adopted this policy of spending fortunes and then having massively long contracts, enormous dressing room, lots of players, which is, again, difficult to keep them all happy. They're very young side. I can see a bit of progress. Mm. One or two of the signings have been good. Notably, of course, Cole Palmer. He wasn't playing, of course, the other night because he wasn't well. Mm. I mean, he looks an absolutely brilliant talent. I love watching him play. He's silky, beats people easily. His decision-making is superb. I like him a lot. But they are very much a work in progress, and I think it would be a mistake if they gave up on Pochettino now and then started again. Because, they've got someone good in there. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Yes, it's been very much up and down and erratic this season, but I don't think anyone would have done better with what they've got. They've got a lot of young players, big signings for a lot of money that are coming into the side and trying to find their way in a side that is struggling. Now, that's difficult anyway if you've just got one new signing, let alone a handful. So I think it will take time with Chelsea. But they have got some very talented young players. If they had, a top quality striker, I know it sounds ridiculous when they spent about £1 billion on their squad that they haven't got, top class number nine. But if they could just do that in the summer, then I think with the improvement that they'll get from their younger players that are there, I can see them certainly moving in the right direction. But, they're a long way off the top three, certainly at the moment.
Just before we move on, I've got to get this one in, Gary. Nicholas Jackson, who's divisive in many ways, he's 22 years of age. He's got, I believe, 10 Premier League goals this season. Can he get bettered? Can he learn some of those finishing arts that at the moment just seem to be eluding him? He makes some poor decisions. He makes bad contacts on the ball. Can you, as a centre-forward, can you train to get better at those things?
Well, you always can train to get better and improve it. But, he doesn't look a natural finisher. Mm. But, that can change with confidence as well. And sometimes I've seen him this season, you think, he's got a bit about him. And he does finish well. And then he'll go three or four games where, particularly the semi-final of the FA Cup at the weekend, where he had three really, really gilt-edged chances and missed them. So I suspect his confidence is a little bit low. He's got ability, but he looks like he's got a lot to do. But yes, of course you can improve, Robbie. You know that yourself. You can. But can you train to have a cool head in front of goal and make the right decision? I don't know. You can practice and practice and practice, and it will make you better, but there's nothing like dealing with it in a pressurized situation. It's a different thing.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? When we come through, it's true magic, because we came to play at Walt Disney World Resort.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well.
So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Okay. Should we move on?
Let's move it on to a Merseyside derby, which came on the Wednesday. One of your former teams, Everton, facing Liverpool. I think we all felt that this wasn't ever going to be an easy game for Liverpool, but we were in studio both saying, because of the importance, because of the position, because of Liverpool's firepower, that they would go on and win the game. Not that case. Was this more about what Everton did or what Liverpool didn't do?
Bit of both. I think. I thought Everton started really well.
Yeah.
We all know it's a tough place to go, although it's not been that tough for Liverpool in recent years. In fact, they haven't won there since Everton haven't beaten Liverpool at Goodison since, I think, 2010.
Yeah.
So they didn't go in there with much of a track record. But in those games, it's, you know, there's a lot of energy. It matters a lot to the people of that city. And I was obviously, as a former Evertonian, I was chuffed that they finally managed to pull off a victory. So I thought they played really well. I think tactically, you know, they do play very direct. Everton under Sean Dyche, Liverpool, they missed a lot of chances. The blame was on themselves in many ways, and they've done that in the last few weeks. They have, and it's come at a crucial time. And so, you know, they've also given a lot of goals away, Liverpool, first goals of the game.
Yeah.
By and large, though, they've come back and won them. A remarkable record of turning things around this season, but they couldn't manage it against Everton. It was a huge victory for the home side. That, I think, it pretty much ensures that they'll be playing Premier League football next season, despite the point deductions that they've suffered this season. But it's a massive blow to Liverpool, particularly having gone out in Europe the previous week and lost a game before that. So the season looks like it's imploding right towards the end, which, you know, we all thought maybe it was going to be an incredible finish to the season for Jurgen Klopp's last few weeks at the club. But it doesn't look like that's going to happen, that there really are outsiders now.
Gary, of course we're going to ask you about the Liverpool forwards. Just something you said there, and I want to ask you about it, and I think it probably is complicated, but the Jurgen Klopp announcement and the decision to do that, I don't know. I'm kind of mixed on it, and if that's hurt or helped or hurt their case. And do players think, well, he's not going to be here, do we need to impress him? Are we thinking we might leave as well? Do you have any thoughts on that, Gary, whether that was a wise decision to make that announcement, or do you think that it does get in subconsciously into players' minds that affects their mindset in a kind of negative way?
Well, firstly, I wonder whether someone had got wind of what he was going to do, and it may be forced them. I don't know that. That's pure speculation on my part, because it is quite unusual at that stage of the season. But when he first announced it, of course, they were terrific for a few weeks. Yeah, they won every single game. So I don't think players switch off. The players would be desperately hoping to win the title.
And they were top.
You know, that's they were. They've just, you know, they've slipped up, and all of a sudden they've started missing chances. And that with Liverpool has not been the case prior to the last couple of weeks. So I think it's one of those things. It's so easy, isn't it, now to say, if you hadn't announced it, maybe they would have won the league. The truth is, we'll never know because, you know, we've got nothing to compare it with. But whatever happens in the running to the end of the season, you know, Jurgen Klopp has done an incredibly wonderful job at Liverpool. When he arrived there, they were kind of mid-table, a bit mediocre. They didn't have a great squad. He's turned things around. They've won pretty much everything. And he's gone close on other times, really, really close with Manchester City, you know, losing the title with like 100 points. He's done a great job. Lots of people will be saying that because of what's happened. So it's impossible to know, isn't it, really?
Me and Musty here, like two old midfield players, used to chug up and down a pitch and kind of know what that's like and confidence. I'm just getting a feel. You know, you told us about Nicholas Jackson, like Salah and Nunez, maybe Diaz, all not sparkling at the moment. Just talk to us about confidence, Gary. What does being confident do, or not being confident? Does doubt come in your mind? Do you have two or three options when you run into, you know, Liverpool's front line have just dropped off at the wrong time for them?
Yeah, I suspect there's nothing wrong in the mind of Mo Salah. He's just going through one of those little spells that all strikers or boys, you know, you call him a striker, but, you know, he plays on the right, obviously. But He's been prolific. He's been prolific again this season. Mm-hmm. He's just having a bad patch at the wrong time.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's come back from a couple of injuries, hamstring problems, and that can make a difference. So I'd omit him from any real criticism, although he's been a bit cold in the last few weeks, but that happens to all strikers. Yeah, confidence plays a huge part. Of course it does, Robbie. When you back, it's funny though, when you're banging them in, they, you know, you can miss hit one, it'll go in the corner and stuff like that, and then suddenly things are going against you, hits the wrong side, the post goes out, keepers make great saves. Nunez is an interesting one because I look at him and he he's powerful, he's quick, he's big in the air, he's good in the air, and he looks like a lot of game. He can threaten defences behind. He gets behind. He's got amazing pace. But he's a little bit like Nicholas Jackson in a different kind of way.
Yeah.
He's an erratic finisher. He tends to blast most things. And I think those strikers, I prefer players that pass the ball into the net and little dinks and, you know, slot it into the corners and that sort of thing. So it's not really happened for him. You know, there's been glimmers where you go, oh, blimey, what a handful he is, which he is on his day. Yeah. But I think the thing is as well, with you know, take Diaz as well, they've all had a dip in form together, which is quite unusual. Because normally you might have one that stops scoring for a little while and someone else will step in. So, you know, and it's not like the team have not been creating chances because, you know, they've been creating a lot of chances. I think, you know, I was watching Trent's performance yesterday, well, going forward, some of his passes and chances that he created, they really should have done better with them.
No, they're not out of the race just yet. But is there a little bit of sense from the Liverpool fans that they're I guess if they overachieved Liverpool when you consider the whole midfield was changed, last season was very disappointing, and there was a sense of whether they can go again under Jurgen Klopp. Is that going to be part of the sense of disappointment if they don't win the title? Is that wow, they did great just to be in the race anyway?
Well, they were going for four trophies, weren't they, until not long ago. They'd already won the Carabao Cup, and people were talking about possible quadruple, which, oh, it's a bit of a long shot, but... I think at the start of the season, none of us tipped them for the title because of the fact that they pretty much changed their entire midfield, and that's a hard thing to do. But I think they have made good signings. I think McAllister's done well. And I think that they've got some good players in that they've signed. So I think you could say that they've surprised us in the sense that they were in the title race, right? And they still are. And still are. Yeah. So I think that's a fair point. Yeah, Robbie, yeah.
Just before we move on to Liverpool, there's some breaking news today that Arne Slot has apparently said he wants to go to Liverpool. It would appear that the two clubs are talking. It looks like things are certainly starting to take shape there. Like everybody, Gary, you jump on YouTube, look at Arne Slot, look at his team, how they play, and, you know, there's talk that he's very similar to Klopp. Do you think Liverpool fans would be slightly underwhelmed with an Arne Slot, or is his football and what he's done and winning the Dutch title good enough to hold him in good stead?
Well, it's difficult. It's going to be so hard to follow Jurgen Klopp, whoever it is. I think they've gone someone that does play a kind of dynamic, similar style, and he's obviously done exceptionally well in Netherlands. He's also a big personality, which obviously Jurgen Klopp was, so it would have been difficult for someone to follow him that wasn't. But whoever goes in, I mean, I think it's going to be really difficult. If I wanted the Liverpool job, I'd want it to be the manager, the one after.
Yeah.
The one after
Jurgen
Klopp.
Maybe why Xabi Alonso decided not to take it.
I think probably one of the reasons, although I think he wanted to do another season there because, you know, he probably would have got either the Bayern Munich job, possibly Barcelona as well, although Xabi has obviously announced he's now going to stay, which is, I think, good news. It would be a very, very tough act to follow for anybody, but they've gone with someone with charisma, with a big personality, and obviously a track record, albeit in a league that's not obviously as strong as the Premier League. But it'll be the same when Pep leaves Manchester City. Yeah. If someone is that entrenched in a club and is very much the figurehead, and obviously is brilliant, as is Pep Guardiola, whoever follows those people, it's going to be so difficult. You know, you're going to have to get a different staff. Everything's changed. The players have got to get used to you. You've got your own style of play. It's going to be very difficult. We saw the same, didn't we, with Sir Alex Ferguson when he left Manchester United, when Arsene Wenger left Arsenal. They had years, and well, Manchester United have not rallied yet. So it's going to be a hell of a difficult job. But you know, for someone like that, you wouldn't turn it down, would you?
Yeah, absolutely.
Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? Step up like a boss and save the day? Or see what life's like under the Tree of Life? Did you? If you could, would you? When we come through, it's true magic. 'Cause we came to play. Bring the magic at Walt Disney World Resort.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour, and they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com, TRUGREEN.com, to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Should we move on, my friend?
Let's move on to,
to today's game.
Yeah.
So Brighton took on Manchester City. Gary, I'm sure you watched the game. It finished 4-0 to Man City. We're in the studio today talking about it. And, wow, it just looks so comfortable, so easy. They got to kind of sub players out, important players, in the last 20 minutes. It felt like to me that it was kind of more like a training session, which is absolutely perfect for what City need with the games that they had. To have that kind of game where they can take a breath, they can get themselves ready for a game at the City Ground against Nottingham Forest on Sunday, which I think will be very, very different. Is it as simple as that, Gary, on this game? I mean, we chatted about it, and I kind of said that, God, that was so comfortable for City, and you said, well, they still had to
do
certain
things. They make it comfortable.
How did you see the game today, Gary?
I thought Manchester City was superb, and I thought they, you know, the thing is as well, it makes it so much easier when you score three goals in the first half an hour or so. And you know, they've got brilliant players, so much talent there. You know, De Bruyne and Foden and Bernardo Silva, and you could go through so many. I don't think Brighton helped themselves particularly, made one or two, obviously, you know, catastrophic errors defensively. But, you know, they're a good side. We've seen them in run-ins. They tend to win, every game, which is... they've got five games left. If there is a plus to losing to Real Madrid in the Champions League, it's two less fixtures. I'm saying two because, obviously, the Champions League final is after the Premier League season finishes anyway. So the fact that they've got more games to play than the others at the top would have perhaps been tricky if they'd played two semi-finals of the Champions League as well. They're going to take some stopping. They've got a little bit of a kind of dodgy track record at Tottenham in recent years. So that could be a potential banana skin. But obviously Arsenal have got to go there as well. And that's always a big one, North London derby. But, I mean, they play such good football. And it's not just the football they play. It's how they win the ball back so quickly and aggressively. And they've got, you know, incredible players, but they also work their socks off, you know, and they that immediacy that they get the ball back as soon as the other team has it, you know, they get it back within 10 seconds most of the time, and it's so hard to play against because you never have the ball and in football that's pretty difficult.
It was a day today where I think City's gain is also England's gain. I'm talking about Phil Foden, 16 Premier League goals. We had a little chat with him after the game, and he talked about actually by coming more central in the game, he's getting more shots, he's more involved with the action, and that's why his numbers are going up. Is it almost a cert? Have we got almost players who are becoming certs for Gareth's team in the Euros that come, Foden being one, Bellingham being another one, with Harry Kane at the top of the pitch?
Yeah, we've got about 15 certs, which is a great position to be in. You look at the number 10 roles alone. You could play, you know, you've got Foden. Bellingham's been playing there most of the season, or even as a false nine for Real Madrid. Cole Palmer's unbelievable. Someone like James Maddison might not even make the squad, and he's absolutely fantastic footballer. Yeah. So. But, yeah, I think, I mean, Foden, yes. And he is better, I think, centrally in kind of that 10 role, because he takes the ball on the half turn so well, and he's so sharp and quick and beats people, glides past them, scores goals, creates goals. I think we've all known for a while that he's you know, from when he was 16, 17, that he was given a fair run, that, you know, he was going to be a top player. And he's obviously massively beneficial to have learned under Pep Guardiola. And Pep's been patient with him. Sometimes people say he should be playing more. Yeah. But he's gradually eased him in, and he's played more minutes this season than anyone. And, you know, I shouldn't say this, touch wood, that he tends not to get injured, which is an important thing as well. But he'll certainly start for England. Whether he starts in the 10, I don't know. But the way that England played against Belgium in the last game was the first time I've seen Gareth's team. They were rotating. They all played in different positions. They were swapping and changing. And I think that England have got the players, certainly in the forward six positions, that can very much do that. And they have depth as well. So, I think, you know, it's hard to see that Foden wouldn't start.
Gary, just as we kind of think about Man City on the brink of something very, very special, very historic to win, if they do, of course, four Premier League titles on the spin, or top flight titles on the spin, never been done before in English football. And, of course, we know what a manager he is and what a squad they have. The charges and... I feel like there's so much kind of credit and gratitude and appreciation that we're all willing to throw onto this football club and this manager. How much is it for you, Gary, a cloud that these charges haven't been sorted out right now? Does it in any way change your, I don't know, excitement of the special things that they're doing right now?
Well, it is a cloud. We all know that. It's very hard to unearth what exactly most of the charges are. I think nearly all of them were pre-Pep, which I think is important to state. I don't think it takes anything away from Pep Guardiola's brilliance. I don't think it does. But in terms of Manchester City, we're going to have to wait and see. I mean, how long we're going to have to wait, I don't know. Obviously, you know, they'll have, you know, the most expensive lawyers available. But if they've acted in an unfair or wrong manner, then, you know, they'll have to be punished. We don't know what those punishments would be. We don't know whether we found guilty of one charge or 119, whatever it is. So, of course, it's a cloud that's hanging over the club. But I don't, you know, I can't see it being resolved imminently. So it certainly won't be this season. So, I think all Manchester City fans will be slightly worried. You know what it's like as a fan of a football club. They'll always defend their team and say, "Oh, we didn't do anything," and all that kind of stuff. It's and you know you can give them all the praise in the world, but as soon as you mention that, they get very upset. But it's a big cloud, and it's a cloud that won't go away, and I don't think it'll go away in the near future. I think it would be another few years yet, probably. I don't know. We're in the dark, really.
Just a follow-up and something a little bit brighter conversation. Brighton and Roberto De Zerbi. Now, I've loved watching him coach, Gary, and what he does. And, of course, we set the teams up every weekend with our lineups, and we kind of try and read what he's going to do. And he's one of their managers that is difficult to kind of know what he does. Now, there's a lot of talk about him going to separate football clubs. And I think there's no question what an amazing job he's done at Brighton, given the style of play, given the injuries and stuff they've had this year and what he's done over last season and this season, getting to the last 16 of the Europa League. First off, are you a fan of how he manages and how he coaches? And maybe more importantly, where's his next step? And, you know, if there is a next step from Brighton, is he ready for one of these big jobs that are coming up both in the Premier League and probably overseas as well?
I like him as a coach. I like the way his teams play. I judge football and teams and managers by the style of their football, that it's entertaining, that it's enjoyable to watch. That's very important for me. And you want to watch Brighton play. Because, you know, they take risks, as we saw in this evening's game, you know, gave one dreadful mistake away. But, you know, when you take risks, there's a reason for that. Because, you know, if you can break the press, then you're through, and we've seen how brilliant they are on the counter-attack this season. So, but I think it's been tough this season, and probably you mentioned the Europa League and the fact they got to the last 16. That makes life tougher because, obviously, you know, they don't have the squad depth of the big teams at the very top of the league. But it's been a very well-run club. I sensed he was a little bit frustrated by things in the last few months, possibly with what's going on and what he could spend and bring in. So I'd be surprised if he was still at Brighton next season. Whether he's ready for, you know, one of the big clubs, you don't really know with managers until they get that opportunity. I like the way he plays. I think he's got incredible enthusiasm for the game. I like his dynamic nature. So I think he would do well, but
is a bit feisty,
so many managers I've seen that then it happens and it doesn't quite happen for them. So we'll see.
As we've got you, Gary, we've got to ask the big question. Yeah. Liverpool 74 points, Manchester City 76 points, Arsenal 77. Mm. Who finishes top May the 19th?
Well, I tipped Arsenal at the start of the season. I've stuck with them throughout, so I'm going to stick with them now, although it's with Veth. Although, if I had to put my life on it, it'd be Manchester City.
All right, that two-way answer.
And let's talk about your podcast, Gary. The Rest is Football with Alan Shearer and Micah Richards. I know you have fun with these guys and something a little bit different. Talk to us a little bit about it.
Yeah, we started it at the beginning of this season. And I've got a podcast company called Goalhanger, and thankfully, it's amazing. We've got, you know, a lot of the biggest pods in the UK and Europe, and one or two in the world. So we wanted to do a football one, and I wanted to do it with Alan and Micah. We do pretty much what you do, and, you know, talk mostly about Premier League, but also obviously Champions League. But, you know, we also talk about our life's experiences, our football experiences. We have a lot of fun. Alan's obviously been one of the great strikers in English football, in world football, really. Yeah. Mike is an incredible personality. he's got infectious enthusiasm, a real laugh. And we have a lot of fun with it. And it's very quickly become kind of the biggest sporting pod in the UK. And people seem to enjoy it, which is great. So, you know, if you're looking for a football pod apart from the two Robbies, as well as the two Robbies, I should say. Yeah. The rest is football over there in America. It is available.
you couldn't get two more contrasting characters, really, could you? Alan Shearer and Micah Richards. I mean, two different ends of the scale in many respects, but it just seems to work. Real chemistry.
It does work, and I think Alan surprised a few people because obviously on Match of the Day, which is a show we do in England, which has been going since 1964, 60 years now, and he's obviously the main pundit on that show. And the nature of the show, it's very, very structured. We show the highlights of a game, then we talk about it, then we show the next one. And it's, but I think Alan's real personality, because people thought he was quite serious and stuff, but he's, you know, he's actually a fun guy, and he's... he swears a lot on the podcast.
We don't swear, do we?
Which
we
people are not allowed to swear. We're not allowed to swear. Real. Swear real.
Just tell me, Gary, as well, just saw something at the weekend. You were doing the semi-finals from Wembley pitch side. Pep came up after they got the 1-0 win. I believe the word is you left him hanging, Gary.
I did.
Explain.
Well, he jumped in and he wanted to make a point. He had a bit of a rant about the fact that they had to play 3 days after losing against Real Madrid in extra time. And I think he felt it was a good opportunity to do so, having just won the game, kind of snuck through. And I think he had a point in some ways. But, you know, and then we were chatting, and I'm getting the count because I'm the presenter for BBC's football. And... I was asking him questions and then he was talking. And then I hear the count. I've got 10 seconds, 9 seconds, 8 seconds. I've got to get us off air. So yeah. I switched to camera. And as I turned to camera to get us off air, Pep put his hand out to say thank you. And I didn't see it. So about 7 or 8 seconds, he had his hand waiting. And then just as I delivered
that, that didn't go viral then, obviously.
Well, it certainly did. I saw it kind of clipped up afterwards, but it was quite amusing.
Yeah. Gary, what's it like going from a player to a pundit to a host? I mean, somehow I have actually hosted our show here. He's laughing. I've hosted our show a couple of times.
Hosted in inverted commas.
How have you enjoyed it? How's it different? And I guess, what do you prefer?
Well, there's nothing beats playing. Nothing beats scoring a goal. But I prefer hosting to being the pundit. Although I can still get my opinions in if I want to when I chat. But it's a bit more challenging. And I looked at it when I first when I finished my career and I went into television. I looked at other sports, and we have a sport here called cricket, and that was done by David Gower, who's one of our great cricketers. We did tennis with Sue Barker. And I looked at football and I thought, why is there not a big football person presenting all the football here? So I thought to myself, if I can crack that side of things, and it is more challenging, it is more difficult, I thought it might give me some longevity. So 30 years on, I think I might have been proven right for once in my life.
Brilliant, mate. Great stuff. Thanks so much for coming on, Gary. It's been an absolute pleasure as ever. And the rest of his football podcast, go to wherever you get your podcasts and listen in to some good football information, some great fun as well with Gary, Micah and Alan Shearer.
Thanks, Gary.
Absolute delight. Enjoyed it. Thank you very much.
Cheers, mate. Thanks, thank you, because we know it's late. Time to bed and a cup of cocoa.
Exactly.
Take care. That's it for this midweek podcast. We're delighted to have England great Gary Lineker join us in the debate. We'll be back at the weekend to review match week 35 and the big North London derby. But for now, I'm Earl. He's Musty, together with the two Robbies. Thanks for watching and listening. Be safe. Stay healthy. It's a good night from me.
And it's a good night from him.
Good night.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Life is a highway. And on it, there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.